Space Turtle time. Hi, welcome to Actual Play, the podcast. This is the Stars Thought Number episode 8 wind down. This is just Dominique, Tomes, Jay, and I reminiscing about the game. It's a few months after we stopped playing, so not everybody has perfect memory of it, but we talked about some of our fondest moments and some things that we still wonder about in the world, because it's a big world. It's a world filled with the actions of our characters, but filled with so much more. And this was just such a wonderful time to get back together with them and to just kind of talk about the parts of it that excited us. So I hope you enjoy this rundown of Stars Without Number. Hello, Stars Without Numbers friends. Thanks for having this recap with me. I know that it was a while since we played, but I can say from just re-listening that that game was amazing. Our characters were phenomenal. And I just wanted to catch up with folks and see what you remember from it, because it's been a little bit. And so I'm just going to ask everybody like a favorite moment that you had in it. And yeah, I'll start with that. Dominique, can I start with you? Can I ask you what you remember?
If I had to have like one favorite moment of gameplay,
you don't have to. You can have multiple if you want. This is not a pick the perfect answer situation.
So like the really obvious answer is turning into a giant space turtle. That was so much fun. But I also really enjoyed punching Dr. Long because I went into that session like, I'm gonna punch Dr. Long. And then Jay gave me the exact right circumstances that I was justified in punching him. And I had also leveled up before that session and took an extra point in punching. So I was like ready. And I came into that session, like I get that he's, you know, just the soft, squishy scientist with a soft, squishy human body. However, I will kick this man's ass. And then I did, and it was so cool.
Yep. Yeah, I remember, I think it felt to me like it was two sessions that you're like, I'm going to punch him. And we're like, don't.
Yes.
And Hope was
yes.
like, don't punch the scientist. And you're like, don't punch an old man. And you're like, I'm going to punch the old man. I'm like, you know, and then we go through all this information. And finally, it's like, okay, clearly that is the answer.
Yeah, clearly all of these plot points have stacked in such a way that, and what would have been funny is like the entire bit could have been everyone being like, no, Dom, don't punch him. Don't. And like, I could have gone the entire season with everyone just telling me not to punch him, and I never would have.
Yeah.
But and that could have just been the bit in and of itself. But it culminated so perfectly when after, I guess, like two and a half sessions, everyone constantly being like, no, don't punch him. No, you can't punch him. Everything just kind of like dominoed, and we got all this information that ended perfectly.
Yep.
I was like, I have to hit him. Like, guys, I'm sorry, but I have to do it.
It's perfect. It's so good.
Well, that was perfect.
Funny thing was, Jay, you didn't call for a roll. You're like, yeah. I mean, you just hit him. Like, there's nothing.
Which I took the extra point in punching because I was going to have to roll to punch him.
Well, but I don't know if you remember, but like it was like the next session, the meteor hit the comet, and you went to find Prometheus, and you found out it was instead just some drone, and the drone had an assault rifle, and you punched the drone for like 13 points of damage, which is like a lot of damage. It's like more than most guns.
Dr. Long would have been dead like three times.
I'm very glad you didn't hit Dr. Long because he would have been plastered to the wall. He would have been, I mean, you could have taken that punch, but I don't think he could have taken that punch. So I'm glad that the down punch paid off the next session. I would have been terrified of you punching him and Russ rolling the dice.
And it really did pay off with eventually that skill to punch the drone, and also with just not having to fight Prometheus, because I was so scared of having to fight Prometheus. That would have been terrifying at that point.
Yeah, well,
I was scared too, because I don't know how that fight would have turned out, right? We'd have rolled dice on that, and I'd have been scared on this end. I have no idea.
Yeah, right,
because like I was playing such a like, he was a tank, but he was very much a softie, and like he was very like non-violent and non-combative. So I think like in character, I didn't want to fight, but then also as myself, I didn't want to fight because I knew that Prometheus was the one person who could possibly actually do any real lasting damage to Atlas. And I had become so attached to that character that I was like, this is the one situation where something really bad could actually happen that would like fundamentally change or reshape my gameplay experience. And I, as a player, did not want that. So it was very like in character for me to try to avoid that combat. But that was also, a lot of that was just me, like as Dominique, being like, oh, I can't let anything happen to Alice. Right, like, right. He's just such That's a soft, nice. Dumb baby and I love him. Like he was just a real like himbo tank pacifist. And I could not let anything happen to him.
That's fantastic.
I feel like if we had gotten into a fight, we would have looked at the dice, we would have looked at the numbers. But also if like the numbers had been like, cool, so you know, Prometheus fires your Gatling gun and you take 1 billion points of damage and it's heavy weapons and your frame is destroyed and you're dead. I think in this group, we could have just been like, I want to X card that. I want to say no to that. Let's have another option that isn't my character, you know, Atlas is destroyed. Let's have an option that we have to upload Atlas's core into Hades kennel. Let's have an op, or like, it wouldn't be like, we're just going to say we're going to ignore the dice, but also like we can interpret them in ways that are still going to leave you with agency, still going to leave you with the ability to play that character, still going to make sure the game is fun. I totally get the fear though, because it is like the book says, oh yeah, if this happened, your character's gone.
But I feel like
that's a thing we would have had, you know, would have been another one of those like table discussions, like when Sinclair was in the mind power.
And we were very like above the table about our safety tools too. So I know that we would have like stopped to actually talk about like the implications for player agency of like character death, because there was a moment, I don't remember what it was, but I think Jay, you did something where you were like, this might interfere with your agency over your character. Is it okay if I do this? Mm-hmm. I think it was when Dr. Long the Elder tried to hack me and you asked me to consent to him doing that. So I know like I would have felt safe like having a kind of like, well, what happens if your character dies discussion. It would have been like an actual conversation and not just like, oh, you're dead now. But I still just didn't want it to get to that point.
Fair. Right. Makes sense. And Jay, you did that as well with when Sinclair was using his like, you know, weird psycho-optic drug light show powers on Dartha. And
we, in
both cases, the characters made the save. So we did a lot of work up to this like, if you don't make the save, a bad thing is going to happen. And
then we made the save.
And then you made them and it was like, okay, well, cool. We were prepared. We were ready for it.
I think it's interesting. There was one other situation, because we're talking about like kind of these, the safety tools, and not just the tools, but like the trust at the table, basically, which is what made people feel comfortable dealing with these situations. And there was one situation which we did talk about off stream, but I don't think we did on stream, which was very minor, but it was you, Sean, asking if it was cool if your character was attracted to Atlas or something like that.
Yes.
And
yes.
It was before session, and then we got into the session and we had the little scene, but I don't think the audience heard that, right? Yeah, but like, you know, like that was another thing where it's like, oh, we're gonna get into the scene and now we can trust that we're all cool to put boundaries, you know, when we need to or whatever.
Right.
And I feel like I felt really safe playing that romance. I think where I get kind of iffy at playing romance is that like I'm trying to remember, I think it was in session one or session two where like Hope was flirting with Atlas and I picked up on it. And I was like, I'm not picking up on like the social cues of what's happening here, but I think that Atlas would pick up on it and would respond appropriately. And I feel like where I get like iffy with playing romance is that I am a very oblivious fool at times, but I don't necessarily think that my characters respond the same way. Right. So I'm like, I'm game to play romance, but like, I, Dominique, need to know what's happening. So there would be moments where Sean was like, hey, Hope is like being flirtatious here. Like, and you would like say, and I think I was pretty upfront about like needing that like meta communication. That's what made it work. Right. When you'd be like, I'm saying this, but I'm like kind of flirting. And then I would like be able to respond accordingly, because like I myself just, it would have gone over my head. Like I'm very oblivious about things like that.
Nice.
It made it really fun to have Hope be very awkward and not great at it, so because we could talk about it. And like there was some point where the like you got like a medical result and she's like, you're at like you're like a perfectly healthy specimen. And I was like, he's a totally perfect specimen, right? And I was just like, and I was just like being very corny and goofball-y. I mean, I was like dad level flirting because that's what Sean is personally capable of. It was really cool to talk about it out of character so that we could sort of be like, cool. Because, you know, this happens all the time in all sorts of ways. Players will say like, okay, I'm holding the blade to their throat. And the GM has to be like, are you trying to kill them? Are you trying to threaten them? What are you trying to do? And the player might be like, I want to figure out what they care about. And you're like, oh, you're trying to figure them out. Okay, that's your intent. Cool, let's roll the dice based on that. And I feel like that super applies in romance. Like, you're flirting? What are you trying to do? Are you trying to turn them on? Are you just trying to be on? Like, what's the goal? So that was fun to be explicit about that, about the intention there. I'm all for that. But I also appreciated, I was happy that you were excited about it because it meant for like a kiss at the very, very end. It felt like...
Yes.
It was so sweet. And then I turned into a space turtle.
Yep. It felt like a very like Matrix Neo moment because you were like getting strapped into this thing and your consciousness was gonna like become a space turtle. And it was like your final corporeal moments, final moment there. So yeah, that was a ton of fun for me too.
It was a very good moment.
A lot culminated in that last session. We did a lot more than I expected. I was like, oh, we'll probably wrap up one or two loose ends. And we wrapped up so many.
Yeah, that's where I was. I'm like, there was probably one or two things and then we'll probably have to montage the rest or something. And
yeah.
We did a lot.
It was fantastic. Hey, Tomes, what about you? Do you have a favorite moment that you...
My memory is pretty shit in general. But I'm going to... Like, one, I think... When I look back on the game, one of the things I just so thoroughly enjoyed, separate from moments, is just the overall kind of like feeling. Like when I think about a game that I've played, I don't usually remember a lot of the details, but I will remember kind of like how it made me feel and kind of the connections I feel like I had with the other players and or characters, right? Like in the meta game and the game, right? And I mean, one, it was just so fantastic playing with y'all. Like that was just great because, you know, like I kind of trust all of you and you guys were just all super fantastic. I'm tearing up, you know, you can ignore that. But separate from that, like the characters as well were just like I loved how, you know, Hope was kind of just this like noble, very directed, you know, like she kind of knew, you know, where she wanted to go, but not necessarily how. Like there was a struggle. There was like there was this deep integrity, but like, you know, how to get there was and it was just great to see that character just kind of on that path. And then it was the same with Atlas. He was kind of like this, I don't know, like almost heart of the story, I guess. Yeah. You know, that's kind of what I felt like that. You know, he was just like the focus of the story. And I felt like we were kind of around him. And that didn't always, you know, like when you're playing your character. But like when I look back, like it just felt like it was kind of around this story of Atlas, right?
Yeah. It really was. It started with us finding Atlas. Like our opening scene is pretty much us finding Atlas and you waking up. And our end scene is you reaching your apotheosis, you know, your final form, right?
Right.
I do think it was really about the Atlas origin story, you know, the Atlas.
I hadn't thought about it, but the more I think about it, the more I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that was me.
I mean, I'm very happy about that too. Like, I think that's a great arc that we could complete.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was organic. So, I mean, that's fantastic. Right?
There was no plan to do that. All of our characters had very big, all of our characters held a lot of weight within the plot, right? All of our characters had a lot of importance. Like, Dartha was like the officer of fear, but also like you also were like the stand-in for like all Xeno, like you were the stand-in for like all like non Annis Tull goings-ons. Like you brought like context and backdrop to like the whole world, and like you kept having flashbacks to things like contextualize what we were doing. And I love I love those, and I love
one of the things that I felt like if I look back at Atlas as a as Dartha as a character too, one of the things I loved about her was she also exemplifies a little bit of distrust of what fear and humanity is, because it feels like it's a very it's a world where humans are kind of like the bread and butter, you know, like they rule the show, right?
Yeah.
And it feels very almost, I don't know, colonial in that way, right? Very kind of Star Trek-y in a way, but, you know, whatever. And no, it was kind of nice to have it not be very one-sided, right?
And that totally came into play. It was very clear that Dr. Long was not about the good of Annis Tall or the good of organic life or the good of everyone. He was about the good of humans, like the uniform. I mean, they colonized this area. They were exploiting this black hole for resources, right? Like we didn't really play into like the really grittiest, horrible, oppressive parts of colonization, but we were definitely adjacent to it. We were definitely present for it. So I love that you were, And like, so theoretically fear wasn't really operating in that space, like we weren't a big political power, but oh man, we were still not up to good. We were not up to humanitarian. Or
I do have a favorite moment though.
Nice.
And that is when and this kind of exemplifies to me Atlas when he, I think he says, okay, so we shoot first.
It was because Hope had just done the like precog and like learned that like, oh no, if we don't,
like we have to shoot first, or like, no, oh, we shoot first.
Yep.
I just
that was a really fun moment.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Yeah. Tom, something you said really resonates with me about Hope, which was that she knew what she wanted, but she didn't know how to get there, and I think that that's like such, Burning Wheel is really good about doing this with beliefs, because it tells the GM like, this is what I care about. And we had goals in Swords Not Number, but I don't know the goals were quite have as much fictional like weight as beliefs do. But for me, it's so important that when a player is like, this is something I want, that the GM doesn't either just go, okay, here you go. Like, I'll just like, you're like, I want to struggle to, you know, be reconnected with my long lost brother, and like, cool, your brother shows up and he's totally happy and everything's fine and there's no trauma about them being gone or anything and everything's fine. And you're like, okay, that just took the wind out of my sails. Or there's the, I want to be reconnected with my long lost brother. It's like, well, no one's ever heard of him. Nobody knows where to find him. We're going to have an adventure about blowing up Klingons or whatever. And you're the thing you care about doesn't matter. And I feel like it's so easy for either, like the space in between those where you're like, cool, you care about this thing, but it's not going to be trivial, and you're going to have to spend time figuring out how to accomplish it. Is it's such a thoughtful thing for you to do as a GM to look at the players' goals and what they care about, and sort of dangle it on a stick, but not quite, you know, make it possible, but not make it trivial. Trivial is boring. Impossible is boring. You want that like struggle in the middle, and that was very, very rewarding for me.
To that end, and talking about Jay as a GM, right? Like one of the things I was talking for a second about Atlas and Hope and kind of, you know, how I saw them fit in the story, but all the other characters, you're talking about like Dr. Long and, you know, and, you know, for me, my little Xeno crew or whatever, like all of that was kind of like Jay just being the prop master, like running this show. It was just, it was really fantastic to see. Like, I feel like I do a lot of GMing. That's mainly what I do. And so like, I kind of get like the, you know, having to do some of those elements, but it was just executed so flawlessly. Like I was really into it. It was just such a great game to just be a player in. Super enjoyed it.
Very, very. All the NPCs were very compelling and interesting, even the ones that had like very little agency. Like Timothy had very little agency. There was very little Timothy could do. But, our hearts melted for Timothy, right? Like, we were like, gotta take care of Timothy.
Yep.
How about you,
and
Jay?
Clack. I love Clack.
Oh, yeah. Clack.
Yeah,
Clack. Lost like a couple of his arms in the end.
Yeah, he lost his arms. Yeah. Clack was loyal, so yeah.
Don like Sinclair. How about you, Jay? Do you have any favorite moments?
I do. I think the one that stands out to me is the planning and the execution of interrogating senior Dr. Long.
Horatio.
Right? Yes, Horatio. Yes. I love the conversation and the planning you had before. How are you going to do it? How are you going to protect Atlas? Right? How you were going to isolate Horatio from everything that could possibly go wrong. And it wasn't like Shadowrun planning where that's the whole session, right?
Right.
And then doing it and all the emotion and all the organic stuff happening as it plays out. Like when Horatio is like, nah, I'm not looking at the card, read me the card, right? All that stuff, right? All that back and forth, right? And watching the faces on the Zoom screens, right? Especially you, Dom, that was fantastic, right? Right, because it was all on your face, everything, yes.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's absolutely beautiful.
We pulled some pretty ridiculous hijinks there too, where we were typing over chat, over Roll20 chat. We were sending messages that way. And sometimes you would mute yourself, Jay, to just be like,
yes.
You know, you would like be gesticulating while you muted because we couldn't hear him. And that was really fun. It was this tiny little bit of verisimilitude, you know,
that really bled
into the game and added to it. But yeah, that was a tough one. And it's funny because I actually hate that kind of stuff in general. In general, I hate like, let's spend forever planning for something because I feel like it is the Shadowrun situation where you're like,
right,
we're going to plan for this forever. And then 90% of what we plan won't even apply because we'll end up changing the plan the minute we get in. And we're going to look like idiots because the GM's going to be like, cool, you prepared for astral projections, but did you prepare for spectral projections? And you're like, what? There's a difference, you know? And it's like, aha. And there's always a stupid gotcha. And it just feels, you know, like wasted time. But that wasn't wasted at all, right? Not only did we make the plan, but also I think we kind of really like showed how much we all cared about preserving Atlas, because the big fear was Atlas turns into a murder bot and Dr. Long, and so none of us wanted that.
It was such a cinematically strong scene, because when I'm watching a TV series or some movie and it's a good one, like you get into that scene and you're like, wow, they've taken all these precautions, but could it fall apart? And like, I kept like the whole time I was thinking like, what's gonna be our downfall here?
Right.
Not because I want to think too hard about whatever, and maybe there would be an exploit, maybe not, but like I was on the edge of my seat not knowing, and so I just felt like an audience member like getting to enjoy that cinematic fiction. I don't know,
I also think like we used a lot of cinematic language in the campaign generally that really played into that, or we would talk about like camera pans or like establishing shots, and that made it a very strong visual experience for me, but I also think just for like the viewers getting to come along with us and imagine like all of this as if it were a TV show is just like really, really fun and cool.
Yes, I think with sci-fi, it's especially important because you can play a fantasy game and be like, and you see Mount Shmoom. It's definitely not Mount Doom. It's definitely Mount Shmoom ahead of you. And the volcano erupts and there's a trail up the way and it'll be 3 weeks to get to the top to throw the ring of stuffity stuff into it, you know? And like, we'll all go, cool, cool, cool. We've seen Lord of the Rings. We like know this jazz. But I think with science fiction, you're always kind of reinventing the wheel a little bit. You're always creating your own feel, your own vibe. Like, what kind of sci-fi is it? Is it more cyberpunk? Is it more Star Wars? Is it more Aliens? Is it more Dune? Like, what flavor is it? And I think that that cinematic language really helped to give us the sense of like, what kind of sci-fi world we were in. So yeah, very, very pleased that we did all those things, because I love little bits of each of those genres and so, or each of those franchises, I guess.
Right, yeah. Right.
So, yeah.
And the descriptive language like helps the audience and the players as well to picture something that may not be like anything that you've ever actually seen before in media. Like I'm thinking about like when I imagine like Terracon Station, I don't really have like a visual referent for that in media. Like I feel like it's just pulled together from like our collective descriptions and from Jay's descriptions and from like the map work and the like the feed vine stuff. But I feel like I'm not sure if this is true for anyone else. Like maybe people imagined it like space stations and different media properties they're familiar with. But for me, it was like something that I had just never seen before.
Yeah. It had, there were certain elements of it that I absolutely loved that made it feel lived in. And that is, for me, a lived in space is just like, oh, I just want to chew it up. The scuff marks on the walls from the hoverboard racing.
Yes.
That was like the thing to me, like, oh, this is down in the bottom of Terracon Station. That's like not very well developed. There's a lot of big empty, big boxy spaces that haven't been like broken up into more different things. And I just have this industrial feel and it's like, And before the COVID times, I worked in a theater at Zellerbach Hall, and there's our doors are all reflective, and so people will stand outside and do dance practice out there. They'll do singing practice, but a lot of skaters will do like skate tricks because they can see themselves, and there's like they'll skate up like along the ramp or the edge or whatnot. And so like I was just like envisioning like the scuff marks outside Zellerbach Hall that I see there from skaters when you said that. And I'm just like, I feel like there's bits that are chipped away here and a broken camera there. And I don't know, just lots
that's
of,
fantastic.
Lots of details.
So I skateboard and having been in the military, a lot of the stuff, a lot of the work is separated by downtime. So I remember all the downtime things that I've done in the military, those stick with me. You remember the other stuff, but the bonding, we come back and now we're going to play spades. I learned spades when I was in the military. I learned all my bad habits I learned while I was in the military. And so when we're talking about this, I'm thinking, what is she doing when she's not working for Dr. Long, when she's not running missions and things? Like, what's her downtime look like?
Right, how'd she cool off?
And yeah. And once we established where she lived, in my brain, the hoverboard, I'm thinking, I know skateboard and stuff. So there are definitely skateboard marks around.
Right? Yeah.
And that's how that all kind of tied. Cool. And usually what I find is we all have those touchstones, like the cinematic language, right? We have those touch points. So I'm envisioning one thing, but you had a totally different vision in your head about it that was personal to you, Sean, based on where you worked at and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the magic happens. We see it different, but we get the big idea. And yeah. I think that's fantastic. I like that.
One thing I like about, and not everybody's into doing the gaming with cinematic language. I've actually, you know, talked to different players and some people are really into it. Some folks are like, well, I kind of want to be more behind the eyes and, you know, that kind of thing. But I love cinematic language as a cheat. I don't know if anybody else does this, but giving you time to think about what you're doing without looking like it's not dead silence, right?
Right, right.
And, you know, for me, that part where it's like, well, we see, and you're kind of just starting to like flesh out pieces of the scene. And as you do it, it's kind of giving you a little bit more of kind of like a grasp on what's going on, and you're starting to flow back into your character, and you're starting to, you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. And you're leaving little breadcrumbs for everybody, right? Because that's the other thing. This is very collaborative fiction, right? So you're starting to like drop things that you don't think are important, but then later on somebody grabs one of those and kind of runs off with it, right? Like scuff marks on a wall or whatever, right?
Right, right.
And for me, that cinematic stuff is just, I don't know. I just dig it. I dig it so much.
Yeah.
So I love hearing you guys talk about it. It's great.
It just makes you think like, oh, there's so many more things we could have dug into if we wanted to, right? Like we did cool stuff, but there's other parts of this world that aren't just, there's definitely worlds that you feel like don't exist outside of the characters. And what's that?
Oh, I was quietly chanting season two.
Season two. Yeah. But there's definitely worlds that you feel like don't exist, like beyond the character. Like if the character stepped off screen, it would just be like the whole set would fall down. Like nothing would happen.
Right.
And, yeah. And I love playing in worlds where you feel like, yes, your character's important. Yes, they are going to be the center of our story, but they're not the end all and the be all of the world. And there's other things that are going to happen in other places. And I feel like we could have easily, like the movie Slacker, where it just keeps shifting point of view characters. Like we could have easily like grabbed that camera and just like wrangled it 90 degrees and been like, oh, here's some other cool shit happening on Tar. What if we were playing Rook Knight and Bishop and we were on the Queen's Honor or Bounty Hunters? Like, cool. What if we were playing Harker and the Mantis folks? Cool. What if we're playing, you know, EOS Freedom Fighters? Cool. What if we're, you know, playing Raven's Purple Night Owls team? You know? I don't know. I would have
because they were all doing stuff. Yeah. They were all doing stuff.
I would have taken biochem classes with Timothy, right? Like it's lots of cool parts of that world that we could have explored. I don't want to call it my favorite either, because there were so many good moments, but a very fond memory. That's maybe what I should ask. Just what's fun? A very fond memory for me was I think it was like second or third session where I, as a player, had leveled up my character to the point where I had teleportation, and I wanted to show that as a part of Hope, and that it had been sort of something that had been inhibited by her, by the Irdos mining company, and that she had like this chip that was sort of limiting her psychic abilities. Yes, 100% Captain Marvel, I totally stole it, but it all fit to me. Her psychic abilities, the ability to navigate through black holes, to me that was all part of just like one big continuum. Right. Like I very much envisioned teleporting as like mini spike drive inversions that she was doing on her own, not as, you know, like not entirely, not something totally separate. So I had this plan in my head of like, oh, I'm gonna have this scene where I'm like outside the ship and I pull off this chip and then I teleport inside. And instead, I mean, that happened, but instead it was happening over a conversation with Dartha about like Dr. Long, what's going on. And instead of it being like, here, I'm going to narrate what's happening to my character, it became this very like Law and Order thing where like we're having this discussion, but I'm like soldering and you're like programming and we're both like doing this like, yeah, what's going on with that? As we're like fusing wires and stuff. And I love those moments that feel like, you know, there's like a day in the life of what are your characters doing when they're just shitting around.
Right.
And to have, you know, you inside and then Atlas arrived and we like had the heads up, and it just like, it felt lived in, it felt like the world was real, but it was also like this cool way to bond over the vac suit. And then this little detail of you like deleting the log that said, or entering in a log that said like Hope came in through the main door. So there was no like,
right.
So there was no like, sense that something a riot happened, which I don't know, just really fun character moments that were fantastic for me. Good stuff. So is there anything besides season two, which obviously clearly we have a hope for, is there anything that any of you would have hoped for, anything that you would have liked to have explored that we did, just for time or for other reasons, didn't get a chance to dive into?
Well, I have an answer for that if I can just hop in. I think I would have wanted to interact with the elder Dr. Long more. Because after we had that initial failed conversation and I went to put together like the history report for him and everything, that was when the asteroid hit. So I never got to like give him like my notes or like talk to him more as he sort of got over the future shock. And I'm really curious to see kind of just where he ended up, like after the asteroid hit, what's his life like now?
Yeah, I think that would have been, I think I remember that being like, cool, we got him. And then asteroid, we're just like, shit, you know?
Yeah, and like, it made sense for the narrative, for like the stakes, especially because we were building up to the final session at that point, it made sense. Like for the stakes to keep ratcheting up, and the asteroid hitting was a part of that because it propelled us on to the next thing. But I do think that if we had more time to wind down, and if we had like one more session or even just like in like an off screen like debrief after the final session, I would have wanted to circle back and see like, well, where did he end up?
Yeah. I think that there's room for that story, that conversation to happen, because I think as Atlas, as like, is like omnipotent space turtle, I doubt you would be susceptible to the kind of controls he had over Atlas, right. The simple AI, right? Now that you're unbroken, I imagine he could talk to you, but I don't think he could just like execute code and like take over. So,
right.
Yeah. I think that'd be cool too. Not that I would ever want even a hair on Atlas's beautiful body to get harmed, but there were a few moments of that game that were like these like high action cinematic fun times. I remember running down and like being shot at by the Gatling gun, like teleporting out of the way, and that like chase scene. I kind of wanted to see. I would have been down for seeing that turnaround at the end where we're finally we're gonna like face Prometheus, and it's like she's shooting, is like Hope's teleporting out of the way, and Atlas is coming in with them big old guns, and he's just popping them, and Dartha is like using her metasonics to hack Prometheus's AI because you have that particular combination of
right.
telepathy and metasonics and the ability to connect with AIs. Like I feel like we'd all have a cool angle to be in that like knockdown drag out fight, you know, Gatling gun blazing, a very high CGI budget
because it's all in your mind. Yes. The CGI budget is infinity when you're imagining.
I know, but I do like talking about like, yeah, this is the episode where the effects budget just went through the roof, you know, where we blew our entire effects budget. Yeah, I loved the conclusion, and I would not have traded that for the world. But I definitely, in my mind, I did envision a big showdown with Prometheus.
I think there's so first of all, thank you guys so much for indulging me in my, as Lauren always says, story game bullshit.
Yeah,
like being able to do blob shit was the best. That's one of the things I signed up for.
It was the reason I was like, hey, Tom, do you want to play this game? You're like, can I be a space blob? And I was like, yeah, you can be a space blob.
Of course. I mean, yep, I remember that.
And so getting to like flesh out like what that creature is and how it interacts with the rest of the world and these characters and stuff was super fun for me. But one of the things that I kind of started to lean into is a little bit of the kind of community-based, empathy-based kind of, you know, whatever society that they come from, mm-hmm. and how they're trying to deal with, you know, these other aliens that may or may not kind of work the way they do, right? And that's a simplification because we did meet a blob that's not that way, but that's you know, right. Like any kind of species is going to have its variants, right? So like, and in fact, I don't think Dartha is necessarily like an average, like she's very different than maybe many of her people in some ways, right?
It seemed like she didn't represent, like, I mean, I don't think we'd want a single representative for all of the morphs, but it felt like she was she differed from them quite a bit.
So one of the things that I would have liked to I got elements of it, but I would have liked to see a little bit more of is kind of her interactions with you guys specifically, right? Like mm-hmm. Atlas and Hope, and like a little bit more of kind of like that how they connect deeply, right? Mm-hmm. And we did get to see it, and thanks Jay so much for like playing some of these other characters, because mm-hmm. that was one of my favorite scenes as well. Is like I walk in and these two aliens run at me and I'm like, what? Oh, my best friends, got it. Like wasn't ready for that.
And then Sinclair, so good. You. God damn it, Sinclair. Yeah.
And then rip that carpet out from under me as well, which is great. But there was a moment with, there's a moment where I think Atlas and I were talking, right? And he's talking about like, oh, what do I do or something? And I start waxing philosophical about like, you know, life in general or something. And then I stop and I'm like, oh no, you just want a job. Got it right over here, right? Or something like that.
Right, right.
And so like, I got to enjoy some of those like, you know, ways of trying to connect it, but in a kind of awkward, weird, maybe doesn't always work way. But I would have liked to see some really cool scenes where we just kind of you know, connect in a deeper emotional level, right? Mm-hmm. To see, and you know, that was one of my goals, right? Was like trying to create this community group, and I was actively working toward it. And you know, so I did get some of it, but yeah, maybe season two, who knows?
Yeah, no, I can very much see a lot of room for more, you know, sort of heart to heart. What is this all about? What are we doing this for? Conversations. What about you, Jay? Is there any part of the world you wanted to reveal or thing you're hoping to dive into?
I think all of it, right? As the GM, right? Everything starts out like an acorn, right? And then what you guys choose to run down, that's what actually grows, right? Mm-hmm. And then I spend more time on those things, which is still awesome, right? Because if we get to together see something bloom and grow and get bigger, right? I think I'm with you. I always thought there was going to be a throwdown with Prometheus at some point. And I think I know one-on-one, right? That's probably bad for whoever that other one is. So for Hope, right, sitting in the chair and Prometheus has got this Gatling gun, I'm like, man, this is going to be messy, right? Because I forgot about your teleport ability, right? At that point, right?
I was totally like, oh, I have to stay behind? Oh, everyone else can go, but I have to stay? Okay. I'm here for this.
Right?
It was
perfect. I'm good, right?
I thought it was the perfect setup, yeah.
I forgot you could teleport, but I knew you were up to something. I was right, like, whatever Hope is doing, I trust it.
Yeah, and in my head, I'm like, Sean must know he's got a good save somewhere, right? He must be angling toward that save or something. And that's fine. That's cool. We'll run with it, right? I think in my brain, I always thought a showdown with Prometheus and the three of you, you'd probably come out on top at a cost, right? Mm-hmm. But I think one-on-one, right, I'm not sure how that exchange was going to fall out, right? That was always going to be dicey. And so if anything, I guess I always thought somewhere along the way, there would be that fight,
right?
I wasn't pushing it one way or the other. If it happened, it happened. And if it didn't, you get points for avoiding it and getting out of it, right? But everything else, I think, is I'm always following the cast.
Yeah.
I'm always trying not to push my agenda, what I want to do, right? And so I try to have hooks into everything, right, that interests me. So if you ran down Sinclair, right, that'd have been fantastic. We would have seen that part of the world more, right? And I would have developed that a session out before we actually got there or played with it. Stars Without Numbers is great for the faction turn stuff. Yeah, a lot of stuff that was
happening. Let's talk about that a little bit, because you have these amazing feed vines, which I have linked in the show notes of the podcast, and I think are also... Yeah, the link in the show notes of the podcast. So if you're listening to this, you have had access to them. They're in the show notes. But like, that was such a cool way to display to us the faction turns. And like, we kind of knew what was going on, but not really.
Right.
There's lots of like, who are these people and what are they talking about? Because there's so much shorthand in it.
Right.
Where did that come from? You want to talk to us
about sure. So in my brain, when I ran through the first faction turn, I thought, man, this... I was talking with Judd Carlman. And we were fleshing out some of the fictional parts. And my thought was, this is kind of stinky. I've got these five or six factions and these five or six actions that are happening. And you may not know about none of it, right? Maybe a little bit of it. And that seems like passing secret notes, right? I pass Sean a secret note. Only Sean and I are in on the joke or whatever the punchline is. And everyone else is just left out. And that's kind of stinky. I didn't like that. Yeah. And so I was thinking, how can I get at least indirectly or some hints about what else is going on? And then I thought, what does Twitter look like in whatever the timeline is, right? And so I used Twitter as a model for Feedvine. And so I put ad stuff out there. I put news posts out there. And then people chatter, right? People chatter stuff out there. And all of it was based on stuff that came out of the faction terms. I didn't have to make, other than character names and like NPCs when they're chatting, I didn't have to make up the content. The content came straight out of the faction turn. And so when Rook, Knight, and Bishop showed up, right, they showed up in this fancy ship. And of course, for me, you've got to have some type of vehicle traffic management system in the space station. And those folks are chatting. They're tweeting too, right?
Yeah.
And so you get that messaging. Hey, did you see that ship that just come in, right? Or when something odd comes in, right? So the logistical folks are having that conversation. Yeah, these squids just dropped off like this megaton thing or whatever, right? And that was Sinclair's folks moving goods from the station down to NS Tull, right? Because they had this whole other thing going on, right? Yeah. Then when it gets down there, there's another feed that says, oh yeah, they've got whatever it was guarded down here on NS Tull. What is this? What's going on? What are the squids up to, right? And that's when it actually arrived on the planet. And so all that stuff came out of the faction turns. And I thought, you know, in the future, if I run stuff this way, I will have to figure out a way, like Feedvine, to get all the information out in front of the players. You won't be able to run it all down. You can't do everything. You can't address everything. But at least you get to pick and choose what you're going to run down and investigate.
I liked getting the Feedvine and being able to set our goals for the session accordingly. Being able to say like, oh, we want to explore this, and then like tell you, and then you know what to prep more. And I can imagine that, like, I'm imagining like in my GM experience, how I would feel being on the other side of that. And that just seems like a really fun experience for everyone, honestly. Like, I love that mechanic. I'm very fond of it.
Yeah.
It was makes me really curious what the fantasy version of that, because what's the new Stars Without Numbers? I think it's Worlds Without Numbers.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I'm interested. I think he's got a playtest out there, but I haven't looked at it yet.
Yeah, because I could see that same kind of, like, if you talk about taking the parts of the game system that really worked, or you might want to adapt to other games, like, that's one that I saw during this game where I was like, oh, I could see using that in lots of places, right?
Right.
And maybe not all of them would work for a Twitter, because, you know, fantasy world maybe is a little bit different. But but that combination of little scenes that you have, because, like, sometimes, you know, when you're a GM and you do the, oh, we're seeing some other part of the world, let's see what's happening over here where the characters aren't, just for fun, cinematically, that could be like this other way of kind of exposing you to a couple of these feed vines or whatever.
Yeah.
But
I think in different genres you would find different mediums, because I mean, one thing is, you know, always true is that people talk shit, right? Like, no matter what genre you're in, whether it's like gossip at ye old tavern, right, or whether it's the feed vine, right, I think you could find a way. You know, Blades in the Dark has like a rumors heard on the streets of Duskfall kind of thing. I feel like you could bring it up. I also really loved that the nice thing about the feed vine and the way you presented it was that it wasn't presented like, here's a problem you got to solve. It wasn't like, because I find that games sort of generate missions can get into a problem where you're like, get to the problem where the players just feel totally overwhelmed. And they're like, well, if we don't do this, then this is going to explode. And if we don't take care of this, then this person's going to get lost. And like, we have to, and like, they end up kind of choosing missions that they don't necessarily want. They just want to not have the bad thing happen. So they're like, you know, in Band of Blades, you will sometimes choose missions because of that, but that's kind of the core of the game. Like, well, can you afford to lose this supply or this intel or this morale or whatnot? I don't think so. So I guess we're gonna do this mission. But in this, you know, we weren't dealing with those macro level resources, so it would have stunk to be like, okay, I guess we're going to go down to the planet now and chase down whatever Sinclair's doing because we feel like we have to, rather than we feel like it's something we really want to do. So I love that it was like, yeah, you know, ignore the stuff that you don't care about and it'll keep going and doing its thing and dive into things that we do care about. And so that was a very nice level of you know, interaction.
And it felt very true to the real world for me, because I imagine that if you are, I mean, there is no such thing at this moment in time, but I imagine if you're a space mercenary on a space station, there's always a crisis somewhere, and it's a matter of managing which crisis you're going to attend to first. And some of them like get worse when left alone, and some of them resolve themselves when left alone. So there are situations on the feed vine that kept going versus situations on the feed vine that cleared themselves up without our intervention. And that just felt accurate to how life works in a lot of ways.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think the hardest, Dominique, I'm not exactly sure how my mind went from this, from what you said to this, but I think one of the hardest things to map in games is the fact that one of the biggest differences between PCs and real humans is that like PCs have like no responsibilities. Like they never have, they don't have families and day jobs and taxes to pay and all these things. They do, but
we don't see it.
We put that on the back. We put that on the back burner unless it's the exciting plot. If the exciting plot is dealing with your family obligations, then absolutely your family obligations are overwhelming. But the moment your family
like no one cares about student debt, but Hope's debt was like the plot.
Hope's debt. She had like $3 million, whatever the currency was.
Like that's just student loans.
Yeah, right. And in a real world, we would spend a ton of time just stressing out and working on trying to address that, like applying for loan relief and things like that. But in this, we're like, we talked about it when it was fun and interesting and relevant. And then, you know, we didn't otherwise. And I do think that we saw some elements of, you know, real world life, but it was nice that our characters could kind of be space mercenaries, right? Could kind of just dance around and do the things that were exciting to us and not, you know, not be overwhelmed by just like say Hope's debt. Yeah, which was overwhelming, you know? It did feel like we each had some sort of Achilles heel, and it was so masterful when you dropped that on us, Jay, in the when we were just after punching Dr. Log. You're like, what? We're like, why won't you be honest with us? And like, well, you got a big debt. I don't know who you're loyal to, and you've held out on where your home planet is, and you've got you're an AI, and I don't know how your brain works. They're like,
that's right.
He like knew all of our characters' issues and could like poke right at them, which was very good. Very good for ratcheting up that conversation.
I think my favorite reveal is when the auditors came to present Hope. Mm-hmm. You know, the receipt, the bill for the debt. Because you assume they're sending just big, heavy mercenaries who can come grab you. That could, and he's like, yeah, no, here's what you owe us.
Yeah.
Can you sign this here?
It will take you 9,000 lifetimes to pay back.
Right. Yeah. Here's the paper trail. Can you sign this here?
I wonder if it's possible to make some very smart investments, go into cryo, and then wake up out of cryo like a lot richer.
Nice.
Like, what if the plan is like, I'm going to invest all my money and then take a 400 year long nap. And when I wake up, this problem will be solved.
Yeah.
It will be solved.
That always seems like it's the coolest part about being a vampire or an immortal or whatnot, is you're always just like, yeah, I'm just chilling in this 400 year old mansion that's worth like a jizzabillion dollars and I bought it for a farthing, you know,
right? Yeah.
It's got bad plumbing, but whatever, we're vampires, we don't care.
That's right, I don't really use it anyway.
No, that's a terrifying idea, Dominique. I can only imagine people with the technology just being like, yeah, this plague shit sucks. I don't want to be around for COVID times. Nope. Put all my money in a high interest, in a low risk, high yield account, and see y'all in a couple hundred years.
I mean, I've been joking with like massive air quotes since July about like, if I could just sleep through the rest of 2020, that'd be great. And the more I think about it, the more I'm like, oh, I kind of mean that.
Yeah, isn't that the premise of Futurama, now that I think about it? That Fry gets accidentally cryo-frozen and then wakes up.
Yeah.
There is an episode where he goes to the bank and he's got like a bajillion dollars.
Exactly. Right? Like 50 cents. just him. Awesome. Well, thank you all for getting together. This was absolutely wonderful and lovely to see you all, to hear your voices.
Thanks for doing this.
And and for folks who just listened to the show, this is what hanging out with these rad folks is like when we're not playing games. They're all great. They're all wonderful. So I hope you all enjoyed it, and we'll have another season of great actual play coming out soon. Thank you all for listening to this episode, this final bit of Star Wars That Number. As we mentioned a couple times in the recording,
all of us are excited about the idea of the possibility of a season two. Who knows what that will happen, and if so, when it would be, but it's something we can hold in our hearts, something we can think about. The characters all kind of went their separate ways, but I could see them coming back. Maybe that'll happen. But in the meantime, I will keep converting our video files to audio and releasing them, and I hope you join us for season four, whatever show that ends up being. Hopefully it'll be just as exciting, just as rewarding. So you all take care and enjoy looking up to the sky and think about all those stars without number.